Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In Star Trek We Trust, a Star Trek podcast. It's been some time since we've been here. I think the end of Lower Decks Season 4, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, it's been a...
Don't say it's been a minute,
long, well-deserved break for us.
Yes, it has.
Not for the Star Trek people, but for us. No, for them too, I'm sure.
And we're talking about the beginnings of the final season of Star Trek Discovery. Weird that this show is going off the air, but...
We started this podcast with Discovery, and we're not going to end it with Discovery.
This podcast wouldn't have been possible had it not been for Discovery. Just like Strange New Worlds.
True. Although maybe if Strange New Worlds came first after or Picard, we might have still started it. But yes, we started it because of Discovery.
Right. Well, before we talk about Discovery... the season, we wanted to discuss, sort of set the stage for what is going to be happening on Discovery this season. So sort of getting immediately into it, this season of Discovery is a bit of a sequel or follow-up, however you want to put it, to the Star Trek Next Generation episode, The Chase. So we thought maybe it would be beneficial.
Desecration of...
What'd you say?
Some might call it a desecration of the episode, The Chase.
I'm guessing some is you.
I'm just saying, some could.
Well, so, of course, we watched The Chase beforehand. Now, I've got to tell you, The Chase has never been a favorite of mine. I think it's an episode that has some very good ideas and presents some intriguing ideas, I guess. But it's never really been a favorite. I think it's been a very middle-of-the-road Next Generation episode, and I never really felt like this was something that, like, when I heard that this season was going to be a follow-up to that and expand more on how on the ending of that episode, I never really felt like I was left with a whole, like, oh god, I wonder if, you know, I feel like there's more to tell here. Like, it was just kind of, it was a very kind of self-contained episode. It was left up in the air, but still, I didn't, you know.
It's a little bit remarkable that it is such a self-contained episode when you consider how big the ideas presented are, that there's an alien race that mix their DNA with creatures on different planets to create all humanoids millions of years ago. But the episode sort of left it that, okay, that's what they did, and there's not much more to it.
It's not unlike Enterprise's attempt to explain why the Klingons have smooth foreheads. It's just, we know what the real world reason is. Same with The Chase. Because human beings are playing aliens, so naturally we're all going to have...
Yeah, so there's been funny criticism of Trek from people that want to be, I don't know, fake clever, to say, why is it that every planet they're humanoids? Or not every, but many planets are humanoids. And right, so this is the way to explain that.
Right.
But I think that's not really... I don't think they set out like, hey, we really have to explain the humanoids here. I think it's a really nice episode.
Yeah.
I think it's very Star Trek. I think it's got the excellent message, which is, you know, essentially you have more in common than you have different, and we hope that you can cooperate.
Yep. Yeah.
That's the message.
It's directed by Jonathan Frakes, and Frakes had said that, you know, this episode comes in the towards the midpoint, some more toward the end of season 6. And at that point, Roddenberry had already passed away, and he was quoted as saying he would like to have thought that if Roddenberry was still alive, he would have really liked the message in this episode. He felt like it was a very Roddenberry-esque episode, which I do agree with. I mean, it does end on a very, you know, intriguing, sort of almost wholesome way.
Yes, yes, it just, you should all get along.
And I got to tell you really quick, too, because I was watching this episode again last night, and I love the sort of final scene that Picard has with that Romulan, and like the subtleties behind it when they're just sort of suggesting that, oh, you know, maybe one, like, they discovered something about each other. You know, they find out they're not as different as they thought, and the Romulan just says, perhaps one day, it's like dot dot dot, and
little did we know the future Picard would have with Romulans.
Right.
That came, you know, even still ongoing.
And I just really... This, what I want to say about this scene goes with what I'm going to talk about later on when I compare this to something done on Discovery, but like the subtlety is just sort of like, it's like a, that show's like a master class in subtlety. And it's, yes. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. And it is truly a testament that they could tell that whole story in one episode,
mm-hmm.
and then just move on to the next idea.
Yeah.
Because it's a great idea. I mean, it someone told me the idea of aliens seeded DNA to make humanoids. That's great.
It's a very Star Trek idea.
Yes, yes. I found the episode to be very, very effective as it is. And I do agree that there wasn't anything, I don't think, there was nothing left to do with that story. They found it. It was the message. That was it.
Right.
And the Klingons thought it would be a weapon, which reveals just the Klingons' nature. They're warlike. The yeah. Romulans thought it would be a power source.
Yep.
So they could expand their empire.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard was sort of fascinated to find out what it was, which is very much Picard's kind of ideas of exploration. And it turned out it was none of those things. It was this hologram telling them where they came from and why they should work together. And that was it. There was nothing else to it.
Right.
Nothing else to find out. There was no mystery left behind. There was no... And in the hologram, if you consider that those aliens created all this life, and this is their, they've left something to communicate to them. If they wanted to tell them something about the meaning of life or why we did it, I think it would have been there, but it really was just, they wanted to make humanoids and they hope you'd get along. That's it.
The more I think about it, I mean, in a way, it almost doesn't really matter how it was done because that's not the goal. The goal is it's wanting everybody to work together. It's sort of like Unification 3. The way Unification, which we liked, which followed up on the ideas presented on Unifications Part 1 and 2, but it's like, it's this whole idea of coming together, working together, but it'll take, you don't just do it overnight. It'll take a while for you to get there, as Spock says. It'll take a while before these people reach it, but they will reach it. And I think that's what the chase left me with. It felt like we just have to find more commonality with one another so that eventually, not tomorrow, but eventually, which could be centuries from now, we all
mm-hmm.
work mm-hmm. together. And
yes.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting that the showrunner
kind of Paradise. Yeah.
The showrunner of Cell Paradise was talking about how they felt that episode, The Chase, opened up or just explored all these ideas of the origins of humanoidism and where we came from and what our purpose is and all those things. And that's what they really wanted to do in this season, was to explore that.
Hmm.
And so far I've seen zero evidence that they're exploring any of that.
Well, I was thinking about this. I think in Discovery, they're in some ways, they're sort of there. I mean, if you don't forget, the Romulans and Vulcans are now one species, right? We don't know where the Klingons are. The president, I don't think it's really clear, but the president of the Federation is somewhat Cardassian. I can't remember if the Cardassians are in the Federation at that point. I don't know. But there are certainly more. But the thing is, and I'm not just trying to point to the species that were in the chase, but there were more species in the Federation in Discovery's time than they were back in Next Gen's time. So like the Ferengi, and there are other humanoid species now that have come together in common cause as part of the Federation. So it's sort of like that message seems to have come true in some fashion. It's still taking place, I would assume. But it seems like they're already starting to work together, yeah.
But that's not the focus of these
correct
stories, right. Discoveries tell.
And I think that was totally by coincidence, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think...
I don't think somebody watched The Chase before season 3 and said, let's do that. That's a, you know.
I think it would be weird if someone watched The Chase, heard the message at the end and said, let's do that, and let's make sure there's lots of clandestine missions where we kill a bunch of people.
Yeah.
That seems counter to the message of Chase, actually.
Well, so
and also to watch the Chase and say, oh, this is awesome. We should make something where there's a ultimate power in the universe that's going to fall into the wrong hands and we have to stop it.
Right.
That just sounds like every other Discovery episode. It doesn't sound like anything to do with the chase.
That's what's a little confusing to me right now, because that's not even really implied in the chase at all, that there was some sort of like... I mean, yes, there was a missing piece to that puzzle, to that diagram. It wasn't even... I hadn't seen the episode in a long time, and I thought, is that going to be the map that they've seen on Discovery? But there was still that missing piece. But there was nothing in the chase that implied there's some kind of like... urgency to it like there is in Discovery. It's not even the same thing. Discovery is already saying, like, what do they say? It will risk the safety of the Federation. Yeah, so none of that. Now, before, actually, you want to talk about the episode now? Because if we do, let me at least give the metadata.
Oh, sure. Yeah, go for it.
All right, so The Red Directive, which is Season 5, Episode 1. It is written by Ethan's favorite person in the world, Michelle Paradise, and directed by I'm going to butcher this name, so I apologize. Olatunde Usunasami. This is a producer of Undiscovery. I think he's one of the executive producers of the show. So, but these are Trek veterans. So, I just wanted to get that out of the way before getting into
it. So I do have some quotes about it from the upcoming, I think it's from the upcoming on Star Trek Discovery this season. So here's all the things said in that about what this thing they're looking for is.
Okay.
Something about DNA. They say it's the power of life itself.
Yep.
They say we're finding out what really what created us. They say we'll have incredible applications for technical applications. They say we're going to find the progenitor's tech. And they say, what's going to happen when we put it together? And Michael says, I don't know. And they also say, this is too dangerous to let fall into the wrong hands.
They don't know what it is.
A bunch of times. They say it about three times about falling into the wrong hands.
So just to be clear, they don't know what it is, but yet they know it's too dangerous to fall into the wrong hands.
Right, which... if I had to guess what it was, are you familiar with the technology CRISPR?
I'm familiar with a restaurant called CRISPR's.
So CRISPR is this technology where they can, something to do with DNA now in the real world. They can like take out DNA and put DNA together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking all they had was a spaceship that could travel and something like CRISPR where you could splice DNA together. That's all you would need to do what they did.
Okay.
Like they say, how did they do this? They must have had this awesome power to create life. Like, well, no. Once you splice DNA with other DNA and then you just put it out, it just replicates itself through the organisms forever and ever. So I don't think there's any inherent reason why they needed this ultimate power to be able to do what they did.
Well, and my question so far is, what's the danger exactly? I mean, this may sound incredibly misinformed or just arrogant to me in some way, but we know how to create life now, and knowing the secret to creating life, if we're piggybacking off the chase here, how is that dangerous to the safety of the Federation? Like, what's the, you know what I mean? Like, what's the, am I to believe there's some kind of a threat here? Like, what is it exactly? I don't understand. Or is Kovach just going to tell me for the eighth time it's classified?
Right. And interestingly, too, so I was reading an interview with Michelle Paradise, and she talked about this season. And she said, because we're sending our heroes on a quest this season, we wanted to make sure that by the end of the first episode, the audience understood exactly what the question was, exactly what our heroes were after. Which...
just as TV should be.
It seems like the most basic of any writing, where you want your audience to like know what is happening and what they're going after. Right. But it seems that if we've watched Discovery recently, that's not something they usually do. So it's very funny that like most shows wouldn't even bother mentioning this because this is just normal good writing. But she seems to be representing it as like, we've got this crazy new idea that at the end of the first episode, you're going to understand what's happening. And so I think that's very telling.
Truly appreciative, too, that they're doing this in the shows, that it took four seasons, maybe, to get there.
Yes, yes. This is not like the Red Angel
I should say three. I mean, the first season, there wasn't a mystery, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So far so good, I guess. We know what they're going after. We don't really understand why, but we do know what they're going after.
I mean, I'll say this much too. At least at this stage, there doesn't seem to be the galaxy is in peril kind of a threat.
I'm sure if it falls into the wrong hands, the galaxy will be in peril.
That's kind of implied, right? But even then, I mean, if you look at season 3 and then season 4, I mean, it was the exact same thing. It was exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, the tip of it. Yeah. The Red Angel, too. It's like there's always a clue that has to lead you to the next clue.
Yeah.
There's always some great threat at the end that's sort of ill-defined.
Yeah.
So I guess discovery is going to discovery is what we're saying.
Maybe. Well, in some ways, they are discovering this whole. It's almost like the show will now live up to its name, literally, this season. Because they're discovering the stuff for the... I don't know. Well, so beginning in this episode, I mean, I just want to sort of take a moment to sort of reorient us where we are with everybody. So Michael, of course, is still captain. Tilly is over at the academy. Saru is thinking about leaving the ship to go on to another post. And so we're sort of getting the crew back together. And it's been 2 years, by the way, since we last seen this crew, which I don't even think I realized. So in between then, we've gotten 2 seasons of Strange New Worlds, 2 seasons of Picard, and I think 2 seasons of Lower Decks since we last saw Discovery, which is kind of crazy. I lost track of time there. But the show begins with Michael. This is a very weird editing choice in the beginning of this episode. So Michael is on... It's that clip that we've seen since I think they released it at Comic-Con, where Michael is on literally on the hull of this ship, traveling at warp, trying to cut through it and disable it with her phaser. And in the sort of tradition of Discovery, as season openers tend to go, there's always some crazy action, fun action sequence going on that is not typically related to the overall plot of the season. It's just some, you know, last season is when they delivered the dilithium to those butterfly people. The season before that, it's when Michael arrives in the 32nd century, and that's kind of a, you know, it's sort of like a somewhat of a fun thing in the beginning. But it always opens on this sort of like hyper crazed note. And it seemed like they were doing it this time, but she's on the ship for about the hull for about 40 seconds. And then it says, then it just like smash cuts to them at like a cocktail reception. And it says 4 hours earlier. And I'm like, okay. And so
this is a technique that I think works well often. If anyone watched Breaking Bad, the first episode of Breaking Bad starts with the main character in the desert in his underwear with a gun, no pants on, but he does have a shirt on, and the police, you hear sirens and police are coming, and he's standing there with a gun and he's contemplating, is he gonna like shoot at the police cars as they come to him, and then it smash cuts to earlier and he's just like a normal guy, high school teacher, and it leaves you to think, how the heck did this guy get into that position? So it leaves you wondering something that's interesting.
Right. In Discovery, given the crazy stuff we've seen, the crazy absurd action sequences we've seen, this was not anything out of the ordinary to see Michael on the hull of a ship trying to, you know, I would expect that from the show. But we only see it for about 30 seconds. And then it goes to 4, and then so you think, I'm just like, oh, all right. But the lead up, it wasn't really sort of a satisfying lead up to that moment. We saw how she ended up there, but it wasn't like a light bulb went off, and I was like, oh, like it was just.
It seemed like it was just done so we could start with something exciting.
I think what you're describing is like, that's something that they write in the script. Like it's maybe they even start that way. In this case, because as a video editor, I feel like they were editing. They probably filmed it all in sequence, and they were probably editing it together. And were like, you know what? I'm gonna put this in the front because that would be interesting.
Thinking, how did Michael get there?
Right. It was just the thing that you're describing. I'm assuming that went on longer than like 30 seconds. It was probably like a few minutes.
Yes, it was a few minutes, and then it was the entire episode, and then when you got to the end of the episode, it led up to that moment, and then you saw how that moment played out.
Right, because
so it was well planned.
But and those things typically end on sort of like a mini in episode cliffhanger. Like it ends in a weird way, and you're like, "Oh, what's going to happen next?" And then it goes back, right?
Yeah.
This didn't do that. Like if it had, if maybe it had gone on a little bit longer, and ended it at a more crucial point.
Yes, and it was only about 20 minutes in, and there was really no question as to like, "Whoa, what's going on? How did this happen?" Right. If like we saw Michael and she had like gills and fins, and then they were like 1 week earlier, I would have maybe thought, "Whoa, what's going on here?"
Right.
But this was just that was Michael being Michael.
Yeah, it was very, very strange. So it takes us back to them again at a cocktail party. We're sort of getting, you know, the crew's getting somewhat reintroduced and the plot's getting set up and everything seems to be normal. And then this whole thing begins. Obviously, here comes Admiral Vance saying, "Michael, I need you for something." Because obviously Michael and the Discovery crew are the only crew in the fleet, apparently. And
but we need another captain. That's good.
That's true.
So we get Kovic back.
Kovic again. Our Swiss Army Knife guy is back, and suddenly we're talking in a place that looks like we're in the Celestial Temple.
We're talking to the prophets here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad he at least acknowledges this. This is our secure room, because it looks like infinite space. But
right.
So I have issues with Kovic and.
We have
this kind of led up to very bad taste because I don't know how Starfleet / the Federation work right now.
I have no.
They have a president.
Yep.
They have an admiral.
Yep.
You would think that those would be the two highest ranking people.
You would think.
We would think. Yet Kovic seems to be answering to this some other people who we don't know who they are because he's getting orders from somewhere.
Right.
And in my notes, I wrote that the only way this will make sense is if it comes from the president directly. And then we found out later the president didn't know about it.
The structure here is not clear. So what I would assume it is she's the president of the Federation. And then, as is traditional with Trek, there is always a commander of Starfleet, which is what I assume Vance is. So there would be other admirals underneath him.
Yes.
But he's the commander of Starfleet. What's not clear to me is... is Kovic even in Starfleet? Like, we don't know where he ranks here. At times it seems like he's above Vance, and then at times it doesn't. Yeah.
Yes. And if we had Section 31, it would make sense because Section 31 was sort of like the CIA. They were always kind of doing their own thing.
Right.
But we don't have that, and we haven't seen any evidence of that. So we just have this one character who suggests that there's a whole part of Starfleet that we know nothing about.
Right.
Was just setting things into motion.
And the thing is,
it confuses me because it goes against much of what they're trying to do in the Federation. And he also apparently has I read directive. I don't know what it is, but it reminds me of in some military branch, sort of CIA, I think, they have things called wet teams. And wet teams, call wet teams because it means there's going to be a lot of blood. They're going to kill a bunch of people. Right. So I think red means blood. A red directive means you're going to kill a bunch of people. That's the way I interpreted it. So you have this guy who's able to tell the ostensibly the military, you have a kill permission to kill anybody you encounter that gets in the way of you in this thing. Mm-hmm. So they could probably break what I assume would be some kind of Starfleet regulation about killing people to get information or to get whatever. So he seems he's more powerful than everyone.
Right. I don't get it. And the thing is, it's not interesting. It's annoying. It's not intriguing because the show...
Not a mystery. Not a mystery.
The show just doesn't want to tell us. And they think by having him say things like, it's classified, it's...
By who? Just tell me who classified it.
How many times have I said this to you? It's like, it's not a mystery... if the show just flat out refuses to tell us, meaning it's a mystery when it's a mystery within the world that everybody is sort of in and doesn't know this. If one person knows and the show just makes no effort to tell us, that's not a mystery. You're withholding information.
If you had like Paul talking to Michael and being like, I'm a little bit concerned about these classified missions. We don't know where they're coming from. And if it was them talking about it and it was part of the show, that would be cool.
Right. Although Michael does express irritation about it later on because she does say at one point sort of like, you know, I can't really help you if you're not going to tell me anything.
Yeah, but essentially all he says is like, just chill out, it's classified.
But it, yeah, but it doesn't, yeah. So
until Tilly figures it out, but then is somebody going to get mad? Is there some group that at the above him? Where are these classified orders coming from?
Right. It would be one thing if we had remember in Enterprise when you had Silic, the Suleiman, and he was talking to Future Guy, and the guy was concealed. We didn't even know who he was. So, and that was the mystery. But we at least saw that Silic was getting some kind of orders from somewhere, albeit ambiguous. Right.
Yeah.
Why can't? Like, if Kovich had something similar to that, then at least it would be, like, at least that would be a mystery. Well, who's he reporting to? Yeah. What is this, right?
I won't give the show the benefit of the doubt anymore for anything, but my assumption is they didn't think about it. And they haven't come up with it, and they just figured, like, we don't really have to worry about that.
I know I make a lot
That's
of...
That's the way
I know I've made a lot of comparisons to Lost over the years, but I think... Mm. This is another case of that where I don't know how invested you were in Lost when the show was on the air, but there was a point in the first like two or three seasons when they were just throwing shit at the wall. They didn't have an overall plan for the show. They were just doing stuff that seemed cool and mysterious. But then when it came time that they actually had to wrap this up in 3 years and they just somehow figure out a way, the sort of breadcrumb trail to get there didn't really seem to add up. So I fear that this is going to be the same case with Kovich. If the show does decide to tell us who he is, if I go backtrack this, then
I don't think they will.
I don't think there's going to be a steady through line.
No, I don't think there will be. And I think in the worst case would be that 10 years from now, there's a new show and they're like, there really was a question left unanswered from Discovery. Who was Kovich? Where did he come from? And that's really what we're going to explore on this show.
Right. I mean, it was you and I felt in the beginning of season three when he was talking to Georgia, we're like, okay, this is clearly some Section 31 setup. It has to be.
Yeah. Or those time people. Or he was wearing a 20th century suit.
Right.
Which I gave them too much credit to think they would come up with something like put him in a 20th century suit to let us know he's a time traveler.
Right. So... anyway, we're kind of getting behind schedule here. So Kovich tells them to go. So I do have one question about this too, but I don't want to dwell on it. He mentions that they found something on an 800 plus year old Romulan ship. Okay. Who found something? Who did?
Yeah.
And why did they know it was something to bring?
Yeah. Why did they bring it to the command of,
he seems
Starfleet.
To, well, he's Kovich. He knows everything. Right. But as he's saying this, our two villains of the season are on their way. So he needs Discovery to jump there and get it. But our villains of the season are already there trying to get it themselves. I'm thinking to myself, but how does he, if he knows about it, how come nobody? How did you find out?
Yeah, so somebody. Okay, so let's. So here's what must have happened. Somebody's flying through space. They find a ship.
Right.
They find something super important and interesting on it. And they say, oh man, this is super important and interesting. We better leave it here and go tell Kovich. And they fly away.
It would make sense.
I didn't
in that.
Pick up on that.
It would make sense.
That's in that the way. Only thing that could have happened, which is a real bummer.
Right. So
So then we meet Maul and Takak or whatever.
Locke. Maul and Locke, I think.
Yeah, Maul and Locke.
Which, Locke, like on Lost. Locke.
Oh man, yeah. So Maul and Locke, who are I don't want them. I mean, here's what I wish happened. I wish that they were just. In this episode, they're the ones with this particular part of the puzzle, and then they're gone.
Yes.
But I hate it that I saw what's coming up in the season, and they're in it for the long haul, because you got to have your villains, and now we've tied book to the villains in the second episode.
Right. Yeah. They're not like Osira-level villains, meaning like Osira wanted to like cause death and destruction and conquer things. They're just bounty hunt. They're just treasure hunters looking for something. It's like a very cheap version of like the treasure hunters that Indiana Jones would go up against, right?
Yes, it did have a very Indiana Jonesy vibe.
Right. So they're not, I mean, at least at this point in the story, they're not like, they're just two people going after this thing. Probably don't know what it is. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a point where they say, you don't know what you have. You don't know what you're doing with that thing. And then maybe something terrible will happen. So I'll give them credit. Like, it's not like the same sort of tired villain. I wasn't fully like, invested That's in like, true. But it's, yeah.
I do think that one of the wrong lessons being learned, and it does seem like each season Discovery fixes something that kind of irritated people from the season before.
Right.
So I feel like, and I may be making all this up, who knows? But it seems like the criticism before was that, was Osira?
Osira, that was season three, yeah.
Okay, Osira. Osira was this villain and was just a mustache-twirling villain and didn't have any, you know, story or agency or who was she, why was she doing these things? Yeah. So they're like, okay, we're going to make new villains and they're going to have a backstory and it's going to be Book's niece or whatever it is. And that's why the villain's going to be Book's niece, and then there's going to be this very emotional connection between them. So it's like too far the other way now.
Right. Well, because now the idea is that, I mean, we're already getting into the second episode, but now, because the idea now is that, if you recall, it picks up on that thread from last season when Book's world was destroyed and how he has no family. So now it's this whole thing about, oh, now she may be the only family that I have.
Right. But now, so I think we're setting up for another, essentially what we've already seen when Michael had to fire on Book.
Right.
Now maybe it's going to be a situation where Book has to fire on his niece. Mm. No, it's not really his niece. Yeah, his mentor's kid. Now,
so obviously Discovery has to rush out there, but Maul and Locke get there first, and then Discovery shows up just as they're there, and so obviously a fight ensues, and
yeah.
Reese got some screen time. Great.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't talk about any hurricanes this time. But yeah, so but all of that, so they get there, the Maul and Locke blast a hole in the floor of the ship, and then Michael's sucked outside, and now we're on the hull chasing them. And I thought to myself, and so when we got to that point, I just thought, oh, okay. Like I didn't feel satisfying to me. I just thought you could have just started the episode with them at the cocktail party and that would have been fine. So again, it's sort of revisiting that threat, but along the way, we're now introduced finally to another Starfleet captain Rayner, who I kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. And he's more of a shoot from the hip. He's old school.
Yeah,
take them prisoners.
Right. So, but that's who Michael was talking to when she was on the hull of the ship, and he's there to.
And it's because Michael won't go along with him,
right?
And what he wants to do to get them.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael tries to be ethical,
right?
On a mission that she was specifically told, it's okay if people die on this; it's too important. But of course, Michael doesn't follow the orders ever.
So is Starfleet going to get angry at her for people not dying this time?
Well, yeah. So. Her ethical, he would have got them, and he would have got the piece. But Michael had to be ethical, which normally I wouldn't mind, but in this case, my thought was just let's just get it over with, just kill him and take it, get it over with.
You know, I wanted to ask you something really quick. So, just with regard to when Michael's blown out into space, and then she's on the ship, when she's blown out into space, her environmental suit like activates and. Is on her almost like, you know, like Tony Stark does with Iron Man, and this sort of bleeds into the second episode too. The technology on the show is absolutely ridiculous, and it just feels like it's so absurd, and it's that famous quote where it just feels like magic at this point.
Mm.
And I don't like it. I just feel like there's no danger.
What technology could they be hunting that's more than what they've already got?
Right, because this will feed into what I talk about with the phasers and the programmable matter in the next episode. But I don't really understand that. But so obviously, Michael, they get away, and Michael's like, "Oh God," they lose them. So they think, "Well, we have to get somebody who knows how to track them because they're scavengers." So naturally, that means let's bring Book back along. Which I'm sitting here saying to myself, they make such a big thing in the finales about. Various crew members going off to do their own things.
But they always come back.
And then they end up coming back. Why do you keep doing that? Just because they're going to come back to the ship anyway. Because
Illy's gone, she's back. Book's gone, he's back.
Right.
Saru's now gone. Saru also left before. The second time Saru's gone.
Right.
Michael's gone.
And I wouldn't mind, but they're brought back for very odd reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, with Tilly, we need to know somebody. We need somebody who can analyze computer systems who's not part of the ship. Okay. So that's enough to bring Tilly back?
Yep.
So it's very, it's really, really strange, like the circumstances right. by which they want to bring everybody back. I just say, keep them all together, for Christ's sake. It's not a, you know.
Yeah. So this is when they start talking about how it can't fall into the wrong hands. First off.
What can't fall into the wrong hands?
When you talk about, I just think it's the worst cliche of any this type of genre that's like, there's a thing, and if it falls into the wrong hands, we're all in trouble. And they must have said it at least three times.
Oh, sorry. And by the way, it being, they so there, it's whatever. It's a box. It's like a lock box. It's a puzzle box that they can't open. We do get a chance to see it, but we don't see what's in there yet.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. Also, so this Romulan, we're led to believe, found the technology of the progenitors.
Not in the chase.
And then they wrote it in a paper book, right?
Yep. Just like Henry Jones' diary.
A series of puzzles and clues, like a scavenger hunt to lead them to the tech. Why?
Can I interrupt for 1 second? You know what it is? It's a carbon copy of Henry Jones' diary from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yes.
It's to get to the Holy Grail. It's a series of solutions to a puzzle and a map. That's exactly what this is. You know, and one more thing I want to say before you continue. Now, again, I watched this before I went and watched The Chase. Now, again, I had not seen The Chase in quite some time. So I couldn't remember. Like, I thought to myself, like, did The Chase end with something being put in this box and being put on this Romulan ship? Like, did it end like, you know, Raiders with the thing being, the Ark being pushed into the warehouse and that's that? Didn't even end like that. So this is like all new. No. This is not really, so far it's very lightly picking up. We're not even supposed to know that at this point anyway, but.
Right. I do think that this was not left hanging, I don't think.
No.
And the impression that I got, I know technically it's not true from the episode, but obviously it was the spirit of the episode was that it's not about the weapon or the power. It's about the knowledge that we are all united as humanoids.
Right.
That was what it was. So I feel that now to say, no, but we want the weapon and the power is almost like throwing away the whole message of the chase. So
it does.
I hope that that's not how it goes.
Because stop me, like I'm going to, please stop me if I'm like skipping over anything. But when we get to the end of this episode, that's when they sort of introduce us to, this is the chase. So you see photos, you know, a picture of Picard, you see, that's when they sort of reveal to us that this is connected to the chase. And but there wasn't because they talk about how it's what was learned in the chase, and there was never like that moment like, oh, I see. Like it was just kind of like, oh,
they never mentioned the message, do they? They never mentioned, and they gave a message of peace between all humanoids.
Well,
did Kovich or anyone tell anyone in Starfleet what the message was that was left behind?
I mean, they talk about the message at the end of the episode, like as they're going over the events of the chase, but there's never like that sort of moment of realization. It's just kind of like a, okay.
So okay, cool. So let's get this power.
And let's go kill people. Right?
Like, yeah. So
they don't stop and reflect on like what an important message that really is.
Yeah. They sort of breeze right over it. Like, so we got to get some super weapon, right?
Right.
They completely ignore the message.
So it's very, very odd. It's disappointing in some ways, but.
Oh, well, I got to wrap up by 7:45.
Okay.
Work.
So what should we do?
I got a work thing. We'll just get to go to the next episode.
You going to do that in 12 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So moving on quickly to the next episode. Take it away.
All right. The next episode is called The Twin Moons.
Under the Twin Moons.
Under the Twin Moons. Because this is not Tatooine. It's not Twin Suns. It's Twin Moons. It's also not Arrakis. Because, yeah. So,
yeah.
It is written by Alan B. McElroy.
of Halloween 4 fame.
Oh yes, yeah, so he's a a veteran of the series. We like and him. Then directed by Aronofsky, another veteran of the series.
Mm-hmm. And being talked about by two veteran podcast hosts of this series.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they start talking how this is going to be the greatest power ever known. Greatest ever known.
But they still don't know. But they still don't know what it is.
And Michael has this little monologue where she says how maybe if I find out where humanoids came from, then I'll know where I'm supposed to be doing with my life.
Well, you just learned that, Michael, at the end of the last episode. You didn't have a reaction.
Learned it every season.
Right. It's true.
She thinks that her life will make sense if she finds out why the progenitors created... Because they wanted more humanoids, because they were lonely. That's basically kind of what I heard in the episode. She should just watch the episode.
Right.
So, we have this... Then we have some of the... Yeah, we got the monologue. Classic Michael, but she's troubled. Then we have an inquisition with the president about what happened on not Tatooine or Arrakis.
To revisit something we said a few minutes ago, once again calls into question of how the Federation in this century works, which I don't really understand.
Yes.
It's all about the actions of the previous episode.
And Kovich essentially told them, do whatever it takes.
Right.
And now it's like, well, you almost hurt some people, so now, sorry, you're in trouble.
And did she not say, well, Kovich told me to do whatever it takes?
He did say I was on a red directive, which we still haven't been told what a red directive is. I mean, we've been able to assume.
I don't think we're supposed to be told. I think we're just, because it's red and it's directive, it's just supposed to mean it's important and serious. That's really the only what it is.
Yeah, it would be nice if we knew what a red directive was.
Yeah. It's not an interesting thing in Trek lore, by the way.
Yeah, no. I figured that. So, all leads me to wonder who the heck is in charge. Still.
Right.
And they're going to make him retire, the captain.
Captain Rayner.
Forced retirement because he's a loose cannon.
Right. While simultaneously.
And then we have Stu and Michael yapping for a while.
Well, I was going to say, while simultaneously, keep, you know, putting that away for 1 second, this is Saru's last mission. And we this seems to be said in every scene that he's in. This is my last mission. Yeah. I'm going to miss you. It's my last mission. Yeah. Like, okay, I've heard this many times already. So Michael's in need of another number one. So I think it's obvious where this was going. That, it's probably going to have to be Rayner, which is a weird thing to do, but okay.
Interestingly, we were skipping ahead a little bit, but I think that was my favorite part where she picked him as her number two. Because I think that's a very Star Trek thing.
Right.
Of like, you pick the person that's different than you, and you pick the person that you know is going to stand up to you and disagree with you.
Right. And that's a thing they talk about in Next Generation at one point. And also, don't forget, Spock in the films was Kirk's first officer while also retaining the rank of captain. So I don't think it's going to be... Because at first I was like, we can't do that. But then I remembered, Spock. Everybody on that ship was a captain by the time Six came.
Yeah, it was in their contract. They didn't become captain.
Right.
For some reason. Even though it's a fictional. Now, one of the things that I kind of hate to say, but I don't really care about any of the character stuff that's going on this season. Just because I feel like these characters have not been consistent.
No.
And they've not really... I haven't been able to be attached to them because it's just been so up and down and there's no logic to it. They've changed their mind and gone in different directions. So any of this character stuff, which usually is the kind of things I like, I'm real checked out of.
Well, the ship is... I think the ship on that is sailed. I mean, if you don't have me caring about this by season 5, I'm not going to at all, right?
Yeah, fool me once.
And that's... But that's also the show's failure to do anything interesting with them or give them appropriate screen time to make them cared about. And they threw Tilly off the show for like half the season last year. So it's like...
Right. And then we also get a moment with Michael and Tilly and I'm like, we used to chat about here about things.
Yeah. Now, I want to call out one thing before we, you know, because I know we have to unfortunately somewhat rush this one. I apologize. But Mike, you said Michael and Saru, would you say they're yapping?
Yeah, they were yapping.
They have
to use the young people's phrase, which is actually an old person's phrase.
They have multiple scenes in this episode, at least two, where they get very emotional about Saru leaving, like hugging and so I sent it to you today. I don't know if you watch it, but even not, you know, there's that same exact type of moment in the pilot of Deep Space Nine when O'Brien is leaving the Enterprise, and this is what I was kind of seeding earlier on. And him and Picard, everybody will know what I'm talking about, have that really great scene when Picard beams him off the ship. And what's so great about that, then, by the way, I'm not saying Discovery's doing this wrong. I'm just saying why it's cringy on Discovery and why I think TNG handles it better. It is, once again, a masterclass in subtlety. It's two officers.
You can feel the respect.
You can feel the respect. It's extreme professionalism, and not much has to be said. And O'Brien and also the Enterprise.
It's kind of like just the fact that Picard's beaming him over.
Right.
Like, Picard doesn't beam people around. He's too important for that. So it was like, my sign of respect to you is I'm coming down. I'm going to beam you over.
And so, and I see that, and I say to myself, that's Starfleet. That's the Starfleet that I know. That's the Starfleet that I want to be a part of.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that I was thinking about was just, and I do sort of get it, because there was a time when the archetype for, or like the ideal for, particularly for men, was like, you know, you hold in your emotions and you are more stiff upper lip, you know, you got to stay in control. Particularly, and I think our society has changed so much since then.
That's an excellent point, yeah.
That it would be almost, it would be surprising. Although, if there's one place that still holds true, it's in, like, hierarchical groups like the military.
Right.
And Starfleet is based on the military.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to illustrate the difference.
Yeah, I prefer the Picard way. Although, it's funny, in my own life, I would definitely be the Saru way, the Saru and Michael way, but on the Starfleet, I want the Picard way.
But it's also, and the last thing I'll say, the Picard way, like, that's something for me, that's something that I admire and would want to aspire to. Like, that's, I want to reach that level of respect and professionalism with somebody.
Yeah.
But, either way.
Either way.
Yeah.
So, it's their last mission together.
Right. So we're on this planet. They sort of mimic a whole scene from the Arsenal of Freedom, season one of Next Generation, where they're being attacked by drones. And through some fast-paced technobabble and weird eavesdropping by Rainer, we get through it.
Totally, disinterested.
And we get it. We finally get our first piece to the puzzle that seems to be forming a map.
Yes, here's an interesting thing. So they keep doing these, which they're getting a little bit better at. So they do actually walk us through how they're solving these problems now.
Yes. Yeah.
I still don't like it.
Well, it's very frenetic. It's not like, because it's like you have two things going on at once. They're being chased and they're trying to figure it out quickly. And it's just like,
yeah,
I can't focus on this. Like, it's just, it's happening too quickly.
It's like, usually in Trek, I buy it. Because it's tech. It's like this weird tech, and they're explaining it, and it's like, okay, cool.
Right.
You know, Geordi figured out something great. But now when they figure it out for some reason, I don't buy it.
Because I think because it went on for so long, you're just like, can we just do this, please? Like, it didn't, this whole thing took up about almost 10 minutes of the show.
Yeah, and I guess the way they do talk it through, and they're like, wait, think, if it was a planet, and they wanted to protect their cemetery, what would they have used? Blah, blah, blah.
Right. It's just like,
yeah, then we get more Indiana Jones, space Indiana Jones.
Right. And then Rainer is weirdly eavesdropping via holodeck, which again brings a hologram, which again calls into question the level of technology here. So I don't really, that was a little odd. So
yeah. But this brings them to the next clue in their scavenger hunt through space for the ultimate power in the universe, to quote, I don't know, some admiral in the Empire.
And so where the episode ends, their next stop is two developments. Their next stop is going to be Trill, the Trill homeworld. And they
where Maul and Locke are going to Beta Zed, which I'd much rather be with Maul and Locke going to Beta Zed, honestly.
Right. Well, also, Gray is on Trill. They mentioned that earlier. So I'm like, oh, Gray's going to come back probably.
More emotional. Good.
But also, I blanked out on his name for a second. Rainer is now, it ends with Rainer accepting Michael's proposal to be her new number one.
And I love it.
So, is that the thing that you said, I liked one thing? Is that, was that it?
Yes. That was it. Well, I liked her choice with him, and I liked, and I liked when he said, I'm not going to be a yes man. She said, I'm counting on it.
Yeah.
That was very Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah. And then they even had the main Star Trek theme played during that, yeah. And it was, oh, it was beautiful.
Well, perfect. I'm interested to see how they explore this dynamic. I'm looking forward to a new dynamic with them, and I hope that it's done well. But I would say overall, I would say a decent opening of the season, but not, for me, it was kind of like, it was all right. It was not great. It wasn't terrible either, but it was just kind of, this is the Discovery. This is the Discovery I know.
Oh yeah. This is very much in line
yeah.
with all of their past seasons. I think it's maybe improved a little bit on some things, but it still kind of got me in the same place of, wishing they were explaining more and wishing they were leaving out all these action scenes.
Totally. But they're not going to. So, anything else for you before we close out?
I hope I didn't sound like a hater. I was just trying to express my opinions.
We're not. We're just offering criticisms. And I like to think that I think we pull a lot of inspiration from Siskel and Ebert. We're just saying how we feel. We're not saying this is wrong. We're just criticizing it. And we back up our reasons. All right. So next week is going to be episode 3, titled Janal. And on Trill, Burnham, Booker, and Culver must pass a dangerous test to prove themselves worthy of the next clue. Adira reconnects with Gray, and Saru's first day as ambassador is complicated by his engagement to Tarina.
I'd really hate that they're organizing this around clues, or even calling them clues.
This clue, they're going to go through this for the next 5 episodes. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and you can reach out to us on Instagram at InStarTrekWeTrustPodcast. And with that, we will see you in our next episode. Peace out.